and patents. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Security Health Plan, offering coverage options for individuals and families, including a Medicare supplement plan available statewide. Information is available at securityhealth.org. Support for WPR comes from MG&E, committed to building a community energy company for the future by reducing carbon emissions and providing more renewable resources. More is at mge.com/energy2030.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 4th of April, all things political, the day before the extremely important Wisconsin primary, a day tomorrow when the Stop Trump movement may be victorious and move the Republican nominating process to the GOP convention in Cleveland, and a day when Bernie Sanders, who's a bit ahead in his state and since March 15th has won 5 of 6 contests, Bernie may keep his hopes alive. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert calls tomorrow primary the most important since John Kennedy beat Hubert Humphrey in 1960. What should we be looking for tomorrow? Why are Trump and Clinton having difficulty here? There is so much speculation that House Speaker Paul Ryan will ultimately be the Republican choice. What do you think about that? And the Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders has overwhelming support among those voters 18 to 29. What are the younger voters telling the Democratic Party? We have so much to talk about this hour. We also want to look ahead at voter ID and ask whether it may create problems at the polls tomorrow. We have a website to direct you to because it's important that you get information. Some of it may be a bit confusing and you need to know what you have to bring with you in order to be able to vote. Of course, the day before, we're very interested in what you are thinking about the primary race, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Professor Lily Gorin is our guest this hour. She is professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She teaches American government, the presidency, politics and culture, gender studies, politics and literature, and political theory. She is the author of Mad Men and Politics, Nostalgia and the Remaking of Modern America, Women in the White House, Gender, Popular Culture, and Presidential Politics, and several other books. Professor Lily Gorin, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure to be here today, Kathy.
Everybody's here. They've been here for weeks. It's amazing. It is the political universe. I thought Craig had an interesting comment that tomorrow's primary will be as historic as the 1960 John Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey presidential primary. It is a big deal, particularly for the Republicans, isn't it?
It is, and again, we've had a sort of longer stretch now since the last primary and last caucuses. And so not only is Wisconsin proving to be an important state because of where the race is on both sides, but it's also been an important state because a lot of the candidates have been here for over a week now. Their surrogates have been here. The media has been here. And so there's a lot of attention that's been focused on Wisconsin for a variety of reasons.
There is talk that if the anti-Trump movement is successful tomorrow, this is going to a contested convention in Cleveland this summer. Why has the anti-Trump movement really picked up steam? According to polls, and there are a lot of polls now saying the same thing, that he is significantly behind in Wisconsin.
Well, Trump wasn't necessarily the strongest candidate coming into Wisconsin from some of the polls that we saw a couple weeks ago. And to some degree, there's been a real sort of divide with regard to where Trump supporters are. They're mostly northern parts of the state and the southeastern region. For Republican voters, there are some really, you know, solid Republican areas in Waukesha County and so forth. And that area has not necessarily been really receptive to Trump. And so the voters in those sort of southeastern areas, we're looking at Cruz or Kasich, and Cruz has really been picking up steam in that part of the state and in other parts of the state as well, because he's been spending a lot of time all over the state, as have the other candidates. So I think that that's part of what you see going on here, is this part of the dispositional difference in terms of different parts of the state and where their allegiances are for the candidate.
He also seems to have the backing, not seems to, he does have the backing of the Republican Republican establishment in the state of Wisconsin. Scott Walker giving his endorsement. Lots of support from conservative talk radio, particularly in the city of Milwaukee. Does that make a difference, all of those forces coalescing around Ted Cruz?
Well, I think it certainly helps his case. And I think, you know, as I understand it, also the Cruz campaign was here, one of the earlier ones to sort of set up shop here to start campaigning really hard for the sort of votes in Wisconsin. A number of the other candidates came after the last primary. The Cruz people were here before that. And so that they have put together the establishment support from Walker and other elected officials. They've got, you know, sort of the Never Trump movement, which is now sort of defaulting into also the sort of Cruz movement a bit. And so those two things are coming together with some of the conservative talk radio in this state. And generally a lot of this sort of which candidate is appealing to the Wisconsin voter.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's play this out. If the polls are accurate, Donald Trump loses Wisconsin tomorrow. It's a winner-take-all on the Republican side. Ted Cruz, I don't think, can amass all the delegates he would need by the convention. Maybe I'm wrong, and tell me if you think I am. So it goes to, doesn't it go to a contested convention in Cleveland? And my thoughts are, and it seems to me, just from seeing television appearances and the number of times that Paul Ryan's name has been mentioned, that he's going to be the nominee. What do you think?
Look, this has been something that's been discussed here in Wisconsin for longer than it has been discussed on the national stage, that Paul Ryan is somebody who could potentially be seen as a unifying Republican candidate for the party. The difficulty always is he's not on the ballot. And that would be a difficulty for a lot of voters. He may be a unifying figure, but nobody in this iteration of the primaries and the caucuses in 2016 has cast a ballot for Paul Ryan. They've cast ballots for lots of other people who aren't currently running anymore. But it seems difficult for somebody who hasn't been at least campaigning actively as a candidate to potentially come in and become the nominee. It's absolutely possible. And I think that Paul Ryan and a number of other members of the Republican National Committee are looking at options. They have been talking about options now since December because they weren't necessarily sure how this was going to turn out. And I think you're right. It's becoming more and more difficult potentially for Donald Trump to reach 1237. It's becoming more difficult also for Ted Cruz or Kasich to get to 1237. So you go into a convention with nobody who's got the majority of the delegates necessary to become the nominee of the Republican Party. So what then happens after the first ballot? And that will be one, you know, that's what has been now starting to be discussed. And the campaigns are starting to work on who their delegates are in various states. Apparently, the Cruz campaign has been doing this for a while and shoring up various delegates in states who have to vote for, say, Trump in the state that he carried as a delegate, but that their allegiance may be more to Cruz. And so if there isn't somebody who wins on the first ballot, they may all turn over to Cruz. Apparently, the Cruz campaign is paying quite close attention to who the delegates are from each state.
So would there be a lot of pressure on those who have been primary tested, the candidates we all know now, to go with somebody who's already run in primaries? And what happens if the party doesn't go with somebody who's already run? And how do you decide who you go with among the people who have been running?
And again, you know,
who knows?
Huh? And you know, a number of the other candidates have delegates that they acquired during the earlier part of the primary and caucus season. So you've got Rubio, who's got some delegates. You've got Carson, who's got some delegates. What do they do with their delegates? Do they direct them in certain ways? What do the rules say they can do with their delegates? All of that stuff is, again, you know, there are about eight people who wrote these rules a couple years ago, and they're the experts on it, and the rest of us are now reading through all of the rules.
It's going to be wild.
With regard to delegate acquisition. petition and freeing them up after which ballot and so forth.
Right. Let's go to the Democratic side. It's interesting because you have a Republican establishment saying no to Donald Trump, who's not an establishment candidate. On the Democratic side, you have Bernie Sanders, if polls are right. Most of the polls are showing that he could win tomorrow. He is ahead. You have a significant anti-establishment vote on the Democratic side. How do you explain his popularity in this state?
I think, you know, again, Bernie Sanders has a lot of the support from young people.
Huge support.
Yeah. And again, we've seen this before. We saw this in 2008 with regard to young people's support for Barack Obama. It's very similar to that kind of support. You saw these massive rallies in Madison for Obama in 08. You see the same kind of rallies going on now for with regard to Sanders in Madison and in Milwaukee and in other parts of the state. And so you have, you know, you've seen it consistently across the board that Bernie Sanders is appealing to sort of the 18 to 25, 18 to 30-year-old crowd a lot, and very consistently so. And it's also becoming clear from some of the polling that he's appealing to African Americans in that age group as well as Hispanic Americans as well. And so it's consistent across the board. And so that is, I guess, the norm to some degree in Wisconsin as well, that there are young people in the state, that they are drawn to sort of the sort of perhaps anti-establishment and more liberal wing of the Democratic Party if they are disposed towards the Democratic Party or Democratic candidates.
So if there are that many young people who are supporting Bernie Sanders, who is, after all, I mean, so many things about this election are incredible, a Democratic socialist,
right.
When has that happened?
Not recently.
The presidential ticket that
recently.
I can remember, not for a long time. So does it indicate that really the future of the whole party is going to be much more liberal than what it is now?
I think that, you know, you've seen some of that in the discussions going on this primary season. And there was some of that, not a lot of it, in 2008 with regard to the jockeying for position when you had Obama as a sort of new candidate and to some degree what he was promising as sort of less establishment and more sort of community engagement. And again, where he's coming out of being a community organizer.
Right.
And so that it's not unheard of. And of course, Howard Dean famously campaigned in 2004 as being from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, which I think is part of what we're also talking about. And so the Democratic Party for a while has been sort of moderate, middle of the road. And at the same time that the Republican Party has become more and more conservative. And so the Democratic Party was, to a degree, following the Republican Party as it was moving on the political spectrum. And now what you're seeing with regard to this particular election season at the national level is that the Democratic Party is not going to follow the Republican Party in that direction and breaking off more to the left again, back to some degree, of its original roots in the liberal side of the Democratic Party.
There was an interesting piece, I think, in the New York Times today, or maybe it was yesterday, that looked at what Bernie Sanders should have done, and his campaign is realizing this now, to perhaps be even doing better now and maybe having a better chance in New York and some of the big primaries that who knows if he'll have a chance to be able to win, that he did not hit Hillary Clinton hard enough on the amount of money that she received from Goldman Sachs speeches, that he didn't hit her hard enough on the Clinton Foundation funding for that, et cetera, that he was being who Bernie is, who is pretty nice. He started being much more vocal about those issues now, and it seems to be serving him well. Would you agree, let's just play what if for a moment, that it would have behooved him, and it is an indication that she is a vulnerable candidate?
Well, I mean, she certainly has issues that are vulnerabilities. And the fact that Sanders didn't sort of pay as much attention, because he's been talking about the Goldman Sachs speeches, and other groups that are sort of advocating for Sanders have been talking about the Goldman Sachs speeches for a while. But she does have these vulnerabilities that are inevitably, if she does become the Democratic nominee, they will become the talking points and the attack points for the Republican, whoever that is, and the Republican Party and all of the groups associated with the Republican Party. And so to some degree, she has sort of gone through this election season without as harsh an attack from Sanders, in part, I think, also because Sanders wanted to talk about the issues that Sanders wanted to talk about. And that's the kind of politician that he is. And to some degree, that's the kind of politician that she is. She wants to talk about the policy issues. Sanders wants to talk about the policy issues. They want to talk about the possibilities of changing the government, federal, state, local, in various ways. And they want to talk about how to do that. And I think that's really been the substance of their campaign in a lot of ways, because that those two candidates are really interested and engaged in that. And a lot of their supporters seem to be as well.
Let's talk just briefly about voter ID, and then we'll go to phone calls. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. What are you thinking on this Wisconsin primary eve? We would love to hear from you. Get your calls in early. I think we'll be crowded as the hour goes on. I have a feeling that we're going to see some problems tomorrow with voter ID. It is not a straightforward process. We'll give a place where people can go to make sure they have the right ID, but you need proof of where you live too. I think it's going to create some problems tomorrow. Do you think so?
I think so, and I think it may cause some delays. And, you know, we recently saw some of this in Arizona, where there were, you know, delays of 5 hours. People were sort of standing in line for 5 hours to vote.
It was horrible.
And it was even after the polls were closed. And so there is concern, in part because at the election in Wisconsin in February, which had has even lower voter turnout, you saw some of those issues already. And so this is going to be more voter turnout at this election, and of course more voter turnout in the November election. And the new law does make it does seem to be more confusing for people. People may not have the right ID, or they think that they do, and they get to the polling station and it turns out that they don't. And that's the complication. So you should definitely check on wisconsinvote.org or the Secretary of State's website to make sure that you have the right proofs of residency and who you are and a photo ID as appropriate. And I'm not the one telling you what it is, to make sure that you can vote tomorrow if you haven't already voted.
I know in the last presidential election, there were a lot of people from both political parties who were monitoring to make sure that everything is going along smoothly. Are we having the same tomorrow, do you think?
I think there may be. But again, I think a lot of this tends to be anecdotal, people who call into news programs and say, you know, this is what's going on at my polling place, the sort of citizen watchdog situation, and that's happened in the past in Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. I made reference earlier, it's kind of fun to look back at history as we enter another primary that may be historic in the state of Wisconsin tomorrow. This is John Kennedy, who was then a candidate, and at the Wisconsin primary, actually, this was before the primary. It was in February when he was speaking to the Elks Club in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, about the importance of Wisconsin. It's not only that we have this interesting mix of candidates. We have a really strong political history and sometimes extreme political history in the state, so people are engaged. So a little bit of history before we pause for a moment and go to all of the phone lines, which are busy. So don't try to call in now, but just keep the number in your head, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, leave messages there. We'd love to read them after the show on this day after the primary. We're hungry for whatever you want. Tell us. And we're on Twitter at Kay Dunn Show. This is then-candidate John Kennedy speaking in Eau Claire in February before the April 5th primary, which he won, which is why it's referenced as the other historic Democratic primary in the state of Wisconsin.
And therefore, I appreciate the chance to come here to Wisconsin, which has a great tradition of political activity, and which has given this country, in the beginning with the whole stretch of political action since 1900, has been in the forefront of many significant and important pieces of legislation. In the days of La Follette as governor, in the days of the 20s, for example, when the actions here in Wisconsin were in the forefront and the stimulus for the passage of the Social Security Act in the 1930s by the National Administration, in the kind of leadership which Bill Proxmire is giving in the United States Senate today, and that your governor is giving on the state level. I think that these young men are the kind of men who I think have brought about a tremendous revival in the Democratic Party since 1952.
All right, let's go to phone calls for Professor Lily Gorin, Professor of Political Science and Global Studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. We start with Jim in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Afternoon, Kathleen. I have a question for your guest. I saw on one of the morning television shows Ted Cruz stating that in the event of a Republican second ballot event, that the existing rules require that only the top two candidates, which would be presumably he and Trump, would be on the ballot. Is that correct? And secondly, assuming it is, would it make it difficult for them to change that rule on an argument that, you know, the race has always been, already been run? And finally, does the professor think, and this is my analysis, that in dealing with his early opponents, did Donald Trump benefit from the P.T. Barnum maxim, if you want to draw a crowd, start a fight? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for the call.
Thanks, Jim. I think that, you know, Trump used his understanding of the media very well.
Sure did.
And he's done it the whole time. And you know, he's been on the phone. He's been in front of a camera. He's been very, very accessible, much more accessible than any other politicians generally are. And when he said something that perhaps he got in trouble for, generally speaking, he just kept going. And so I think that it may be kind of part of that, you know, P.T. Barnum definition, but it's also an astute understanding of how our 24-hour media cycle works and his availability to it.
Well, is it, you think, absolutely true that considering his dismal poll numbers among women in this country, that there is virtually no chance that he could win the presidential election?
Well, I mean, one would have to see what happens if he does become the nominee, obviously. But as I've said to any number of my classes, women are all over the country. We're not confined to any particular state. We're not confined to any particular area.
There are a lot of women.
There are a lot of women.
Yeah.
We're all over the place. And we also don't vote as a block. I mean, and that's something to, you know, pay some attention to. But he does not do well in terms of female approval of him. And there are more potentially difficulties for him among women voters in the Republican Party who are not necessarily all that supportive of him. And so it would be hard for him to, it will be a difficult race for whoever the nominee is on both sides. I think it will be a very tight race. But I do think that, you know, Trump is in the process of potentially alienating or at least pushing aside some of the most consistent voters in the country. And we are also a majority of the voters in the country.
Sue in Winter. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thank you, Kathleen,
sure,
for this interesting conversation. I just wanted to call and say that I am 68 years old, not hardly a young person any longer, and I support Bernie, but for the main reason that he's the only candidate who has made it imperative that campaign finance reform happen. And he's proven that it is possible to run a successful campaign without the support of big business, Wall Street, or the oil companies, and he's not beholden to anyone. He's a free spirit, and I love that. I'm a child of the 60s, so I share that hope with him that nothing will change until campaign finance is reformed.
Mm-hmm. And do you anticipate a win for your candidate tomorrow, Sue?
I certainly hope so. It's amazing. It's totally amazing because just a few months ago, everyone wrote him off as an idealist and that there was no hope at all. And if we have no hope for change, it's a pretty sad commentary of the United States.
Thanks for your call, Sue. Professor Gorin.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and we here in Wisconsin know, we had a senator who ran a number of times on really reforming campaign financing, and the last time he ran, he lost in trying to abide by a lot of the laws that he himself had advocated for. I'm talking about Russ Feingold here, who had collaborated with, across the aisle with John McCain, on trying to sort of stem some of the money in politics. It's a really huge huge issue, and it can be an extremely problematic one.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen a lot of polling on that, but the Marquette poll, which came out last week, which is usually pretty reliable, looked at a real tightening of that race. Mm-hmm. Feingold was ahead by a significant amount. This poll showed that it's not that significant anymore. What do you make of that?
Well, again, I think people are starting, in Wisconsin, people are starting to engage with the race. I think for a long time, people weren't really engaged with the race. For the most part, the candidates themselves weren't necessarily campaigning. Feingold hasn't been in office for 6 years now. He has to reintroduce himself to a lot of Wisconsinites, people who didn't know him at all, new voters here, but also people who, hadn't really been aware of what he's up to, what he's done, and so forth. Same thing with Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson has had a fairly low profile as a senator. That's not necessarily a good or bad thing, but it also indicated in a number of the polls that there was a low name recognition for Ron Johnson as one of our senators. And that means that he, too, has to introduce himself to the populace and campaign. And I think you're starting to see now that both campaigns are ratcheting up their engagement. And Ron Johnson has also been in the news mostly recently around the Merrick Garland appointment, because right. He's on the Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sue, so much for your call. John in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I want to just say that I think the objective of the whole race is to win, and John Kasich is the only Republican that's running that has a poll numbers to win, because he has a balanced approach to solving problems that Cruz and Trump do not have, and they lack the network to work in Washington, and they lack the knowledge of foreign policy. I mean, even Cruz is a freshman senator. So I really think Kasich is the one that we should be supporting, and hope that they vote for him in the contested convention. And as far as Bernie and Hillary go, I think they'd be a disaster, and that's why I want Kasich to win. I don't believe giveaways are the way to grow the economy in our country.
Thank you. Thanks, John, for the call. Lily.
Sure. I mean, the John makes a point with regard to, head-to-head matchups for the general election with regard to either Sanders or Clinton against Kasich, Cruz, or Trump. And Kasich seems to do better in these head-to-head matchups. But the general election is in November, when it will be snowing again like it's doing right now in April.
I know, on April 4th. Oh, poor us.
But sometimes the head-to-head matchups that are pulled in April or March are not necessarily the same as what will happen in a general election when you do have the two candidates against one another mm-hmm. at that point. But the caller made an argument with regard to why he is supporting or thinks others should support Kasich over Cruz and Trump. And Trump is coming as an outsider. He absolutely is. And that's a lot of his appeal. And Cruz is running as somebody who is, sort of outside the political dynamic within our sort of Madisonian system. And that doesn't necessarily always lead to policies made. It often leads to policies not made. And that's part of the difference. Kasich has been inside the policy process and sort of the political apparatus in the United States at state, local, and national level for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John, for your call. Our number, 800-486-8655. Primary Eve in Wisconsin. Professor Lily Gorin, political science professor and global studies at Carroll University, is our guest, and we're covering it. We will cover all of it on Wednesday, but we're covering what we're thinking about today. Now, let's go to Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
My comment essentially is that if Trump winds up gathering the largest number of delegates and we wind up at a contested convention and Trump is not picked as the candidate, I don't think you're going to see a large number of Trump supporters supporting whoever the Republican candidate is. Whether or not Trump runs as a third-party candidate, I think that if he garners the largest number of delegates and is not picked as the nominee, the election is essentially handed to whoever the Democratic nominee is.
I, I think Matt's, you know, he's pointing to something that is potentially a threat to many, many, many down ballot races in the Republican Party. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Republican National Committee, with Rince Priebus at the head of it, has been trying to figure out, you know, what the solution to this situation is. And they are concerned that if Trump is, you know, is the one who accumulates the most number of delegates, but in the end doesn't get to 1237 and may not get the nomination because there's a lot of support for other people and potentially against the Never Trump movement, that the down ballot races across the country are vulnerable, more vulnerable than they would have been otherwise. And again, it's about the people staying home or voting for a potential third party candidacy, which is also hard to put together at this late date.
It is amazing to me, Professor Gorin, that after the Republicans lost, Mitt Romney lost the last go around, that the Republican, we talked about this all the time on this show, that the Republican Party didn't realize that for the future of the party, they were going to have to reach out to more minorities. They were going to have to get more of the Latino-Latina vote, which is going up 2 percentage points in population every 2 years in this country, that you can't win a presidential contest unless you change the way the party is functioning. And what happened? But exactly the opposite. So you have Donald Trump on this immigration platform that is incredibly radical, that doesn't get the party what it needs in order to win the highest office in the land. How did that happen?
Well, I think it's in part because Donald Trump is you're right, running on an anti-immigration platform, but he also, in what he is articulating, which is in a lot of ways a kind of anti-globalization platform, is also sort of striking into a lot of the insecurity and concerns of a lot of the white voters in the Republican Party. And so the, you know, both parties are big tents, and the tents themselves are often held together sort of by some tension. And what you're seeing in this particular election season is the tension of the base voter in the Republican Party is not the same concerns and not the same policy areas that are at the elite level or a lot of the donor level. And so those sort of two different issue areas are not being woven together. They're in fact being stripped apart from one another during this election season. One of the things I said to some of my students recently was the Republican Party that went into this primary season is not going to be the Republican Party that comes out of this primary season. I don't know what form it will take exactly, but it's not going to be the same Republican Party that existed last April. And I think part of what you're seeing is a lot of this sort of fracturing. But the Democratic Party went through this in the 1970s, and they had exactly the same kind of a fight with regard to sort of the elite elected officials, donor class, if you want to call it that, and the base of the party. The base of the party was a lot more liberal than the sort of donor class or elite elected official class level. And you had a lot of the same kind of tension and fissure that's going on now in the Republican Party.
Interesting. Yeah. Matt, thanks for your call. Connie in Portage. Hi, Connie.
Hi. My main concern right now is security. And I love Bernie Sanders. My heart is with him, but my head is with Hillary. She has so much experience, and she's always been for women. Plus, I love that she knows everybody, you know, overseas. And I just feel safer with her.
All right. Thank you for the
sure.
call. And will is that a substantial number of her voters who will vote for her on security?
I think that that's a lot of where Hillary Clinton is pulling her support. You know, sort of older voters, voters that are concerned about a clearly articulated, definitive foreign policy. Sanders was critiqued early in the primary race with regard to not having a fully fleshed out foreign policy, national security policy. He has been working with advisors and defining where a lot of his positions are so that there is more substance to his policies. But that is certainly an early critique of him that has been sort of consistent throughout the primary season.
Welcoming more phone calls. It's the day before the primary, so as you can imagine, on our weekly All Things Political, we are talking about what the polls are showing, that Donald Trump may be having significant problems carrying forward after tomorrow. The polls are showing that he will probably lose. Maybe we'll all be surprised. You never know. Polls haven't been, you know, wildly accurate this campaign season. Who knows? But that's what it's looking like right now. It's also looking like Bernie Sanders may be winning the Democratic primary. So there's kind of this anti-Democratic establishment thing going on in the state of Wisconsin, and kind of the opposite on the Republican side. So it's a race, and it's a very important race, particularly for Republicans, because if the Stop Donald Trump movement wins tomorrow, then what happens? I mean, what happens? What are the Republicans going to do? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And please leave your messages there, because you're all over the state. There aren't any radio outlets that have the kind of reach that we do all over the state, and a chance for you to talk about who you're voting for or what you're seeing, if you're worried about voter ID, if you're excited about a candidate, if you've had enough with the whole process. We'd really like to read your comments when the show is over, and that's The Kathleen Dunn Show. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I do want to ask Professor Lily Gorin, our guest, about a little bit more about Scott Walker. So we want to, it's interesting that both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have woven Scott Walker into their campaign rhetoric, anti-Scott Walker, but so has Donald Trump. And so does that work for Democrats in rallying Democrats to the polls, but it does it do the opposite for Republicans? So we'll hear what Sanders and Trump had to say. Well, they've said a lot. Just one of their campaign appearances in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Campaigns on the Democratic and Republican sides have been referencing Donald Trump. This is Scott Walker. This is Donald Trump in Janesville last week, and it didn't seem to be working for him. But here's what he had to say about Scott Walker.
I wrote down notes about Wisconsin. Look, he certainly can't endorse me after what I did to him in the race, right? But look at this. By the summer of 2015, Wisconsin was facing a $2.2 billion two-year budget deficit. That's terrible. By the way, these are out of books. Like, this isn't Trump. This is out of books. Total state debt is $45 billion. Now, maybe somebody's going to tell me that's wrong, but again, these are $45 billion, very high, one of the higher ones. 20,000 fewer people in labor force in Wisconsin than 7 years ago, even though population has grown by 100,000. So your population is higher. And now, I wouldn't have done this, but would he endorse Cruz? What am I going to do? Am I going to say he's doing a great job? He's not doing a great job.
And this is Bernie Sanders last week speaking in Madison.
Next Tuesday, there's going to be a very, very important primary here in Wisconsin. And you have the opportunity to tell your governor loudly and clearly that his entire agenda is wrong.
So does it work for the Democratic candidates? Hillary Clinton has not been kind to Governor Walker in getting their people out to the polls, in part to say, we don't like Scott Walker either. Is that helping Democrats? And why is it that Trump talking, why would he do that to talk about Walker at that Janesville speech? And it seems to be having the opposite effect on his campaign, because I guess the Republican base still really likes Scott Walker.
The Republican base still likes and supports Scott Walker. And so in a certain sense, Trump is, you know, adding fuel to the fire with regard to, the establishment. Scott Walker is the establishment in Wisconsin. And he's making the speech in Janesville, which is the heart of Paul Ryan territory. And as I understand it, that particular rally, Paul Ryan was also booed by the people at that particular rally. So what you see is, you know, sort of this is what Trump does also. You know, he stirs up the pot. And he's probably not going to carry the state tomorrow in the primary, from what I've seen. He may get some of the delegates because of the way the delegates are allocated. But, you know, he's doing what Donald Trump does. And sometimes it works for him and sometimes it doesn't. And it seems like in Wisconsin, particularly in southeastern Wisconsin, it's not going to work for Donald Trump. Does it help the Democrats? It certainly does engage their base and pull them out to the primaries. You know, primaries are inevitably lower turnout races than the national election in November. And so if you want to get your voters out there, you know, you push on the issues that are going to move them to the polls. And critiquing Scott Walker is one of the things that moves Democratic base voters in Wisconsin to the polls.
Do you want to give a guess as to, we played that 1960 primary. It was 50% turnout in that primary in the state of Wisconsin. I've heard it might be as high as 40 tomorrow. Do you think it will?
Wisconsin and our friends to the north, Minnesota, we have higher turnout rates for the most part in most elections. At the same time, we do have the new voter laws in place for this election. Whether that turns people away or it turns people off, I don't know. And so we may see higher turnout than a lot of other states, but we also may have, you know, some of it subtracted because of the issues at the polling place.
Somebody wants to talk about that. Brad in Idaho. Hi, Brad.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm just listening in, knowing, you know, how big Wisconsin is with the caucuses and everything going on in your state. It's an important state to win. And I was listening this morning to another radio station. They're estimating about 300,000 registered voters might not have the chance to vote tomorrow. Largely the percentage they're estimating is, you know, Hispanic and ethnic groups and the younger population, like college students. I'm just wondering what you guys are thinking is going to happen tomorrow with that, if you're going to see a case like Arizona unfold where you're going to have a lot of upset people, where, you know, it's more looking like a republic rather than a democracy in the states with this election process.
Yeah, Arizona was terrible. We've talked a little bit about problems in... Do you think it could be as bad as Arizona tomorrow?
I certainly hope not. And
me
some
too.
Of the changes that went on in Arizona in terms of the number of polling places that were available to people had been shrunken rather dramatically. We don't have that going on. What we do have is this new voting ID law, and, you know, the sort of what is a valid ID is going to be the tricky part tomorrow for people. They may have something that they think is a valid ID, right, but it may turn out not to be.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Do you think that there will be, it's kind of another subject we'll explore once elections are over, but I wonder how many cases there are before the Supreme Court now on all these voter ID and restrictions. Do you think that we're going to see some changes in restrictions after the presidential election, or is this kind of a done deal that from now on a lot of places are going to have voter ID?
I don't know. And certainly, if you remember, after the 2012 election, at the speech that President Obama gave when it was indicated he would be reelected, he talked specifically about the difficulty that people were having throughout the country because of some of the new voter ID laws, and actually people who are legally entitled to vote not being able to vote. And if that's, you know, senior citizens who don't have the right ID because they don't drive anymore, or if it's a young college student, whatever it is, the fact that the franchise seems to be in lots of places more constrained is a problematic for a democracy that's based on people's right to vote.
Lynn in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, hi Kathleen. Thank you for taking my phone
call.
I misplaced my driver's license, so last Friday I went to the DMV on 55th and Grange, and it was loaded, just packed with people with the same idea, getting their ID or their photo ID. But all the systems were down, so I said, well, that's all right,
yes,
I'll just go to a different one. And they explained that they were down throughout the entire state.
They were.
So not a single person could get a photo ID or a driver's license taken Friday morning. Seemed a lot of people were angry, and one gentleman said, this is what democracy looks like, his exact quote.
Yeah, they came up about noon.
Very frustrated.
I voted early for the first time in my life because I thought tomorrow might be, I have a busy day tomorrow, but they were up again about noon. But it was terrible timing for a system to go down. Terrible. So what did you do? Did you wait, or you went, what are you doing?
I waited till about 11:45. If I'd known it was going to go back up at noon, I would have But I did come back at the end of the day, and I was fortunate enough to get something. But for people who took the morning off from work, they probably weren't so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So probably it did limit the number of voters that will be able to vote tomorrow.
Yeah. Did they do something over the weekend?
They
Professor
did. Yeah. They opened up the DMVs, I believe, both Saturday and Sunday until about 3.
I
know at least Saturday until 3 to try to accommodate people who had, you know, sort of faced that, because it was across the state, so it wasn't just one place. And this is, again, it's problematic when you have a new voter ID law and people are trying to comply with it, and then they go to comply with it and they can't get what's necessary. And they took time off from work, or they did whatever
Absolutely.
They chose to do. And oftentimes it's a hardship to, you know, to make that trek to take the time off of work or to get a babysitter or whatever. And so, you know,
or to take the bus, you know,
take
the bus home, right?
Exactly. And so this may be problematic going forward this election. And again, in November, where you'll have higher percentage of people who are going to be voting.
Thank you, Lynn, very much for talking about your experience. Chris in Madison. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question for the professor. As a Democrat who is kind of leaning towards Hillary, but also not totally against a vote for Bernie, I'm wondering whether or not here in Dane County, it's not strategic for me to vote for Trump, take advantage of our state's open primary rules. And I think, honestly, either Hillary or Bernie up against Trump is a lot more good for Democrats than seeing Cruz or Kasich up against either of them.
Is that what you're going to do, Chris?
Well, I'm flirting with it.
My response always is, you know, what you do and how you vote is important, and it should be a choice that you make. And it's also what I say with people who choose not to vote. And so we do have an open primary in Wisconsin. So as I've talked with my students, you know, you can vote on either side. It doesn't matter what your own party affiliation is. But I also think in this race on both sides, every vote is going to count. They're going to count for Sanders or for Clinton. They're going to count for Trump or Cruz or Kasich.
And where are independents breaking in this state?
I haven't seen a lot of polling on where independents are breaking in this state.
So you can choose one or the other if you're
yeah.
an independent, too. It'll be interesting to
yeah.
see if they're voting in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary.
And it may sort of more or less sort itself out a little bit evenly,
mm-hmm.
in part the way that Chris is highlighting it. If you sort of think, okay, well, either of those are acceptable to me, but I might just sort of vote for one of these people instead, because they're going to be weaker or stronger again in the general election.
Right. Thank you, Chris. You can call us back and let us know what you did. Sometimes people call and you wonder a few days later, what did Chris do? You can call us, Chris. Mary in Watertown. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I just thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My main point is, regardless of anyone's party, if they have children or grandchildren, to take a good look at the candidates that have a strong position on climate change. I think that we need that to look at the fact that the overwhelming majority of scientists believe that it's happening and it could lead to collapse of many of our ecological systems. And so I'm just urging people to look at that as a pivotal point, because I believe that scarcity of resources will lead to more wars and migrations, storms, and things like that. So thank you for taking
that. So as long as it's the day before, we can't talk about who you're voting for tomorrow. But, Mary, does that lead you to someone?
Well, it leads me to realize that one party has no candidate with a good position or any position on this point. And I believe that the strongest one is Mr. Sanders. I don't think that Hillary has as much of a stand, although it would be better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mary, for the call. It is an issue for our times, isn't it?
It is, and here we sit on the shores of Lake Michigan, and I teach in Waukesha, which has some issues with regard to its water,
mm-hmm.
And water scarcity is a growing issue globally, and it's also an issue in our country. And so issues around climate change, water scarcity, food scarcity are going to be growing, not shrinking.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary, so much for your call. And let's go to Art, probably our last caller in Elm Grove. Hi, Art.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the comment that I do think that Hillary is the most qualified, but I'm going to vote for Kasich because I think he would be the most effective with a Republican Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tired of the gridlock, and I'm afraid that Hillary would so polarize the congressional process that we would have more of the same, and Cruz and Trump are just off my radar entirely as being totally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But I am in Bernie as a socialist. I like a lot of the things that he's saying, but I just don't think he would have the congressional backing to be able to accomplish almost anything of what he's saying, and that, unfortunately, being a lifelong Democrat leaves me voting for Kasich.
Yeah, interesting. So what would, we've got about 30 seconds, but a lot of people would like to see the gridlock broken. What would break the gridlock?
Collaboration across the aisle on both sides.
And a Senate that would be whatever the presidential, you know, some balance here?
Well, I mean, if you have the House, the Senate, and the White House all of the same party, you're not going to have gridlock.
Right.
That's I mean, it's a parliamentary system. It's kind of the parliamentary model. And when you have divided government, as we've had on and off now for 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. you end up with this sort of gridlock and really, really incremental change, if at all. So, yeah.
We got a lot of gridlock.
We got a lot of gridlock.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks
for
having me.
We'll talk to you again when everything's finished here. Professor Lily Gorin, Professor of Political Science and Global Studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. We thank her for being with us the day before the big Wisconsin primary. We're going to be speaking about the results, and that will be on Wednesday. Craig Gilbert will be one of our guests, who is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's a superb political reporter, and he'll be with us to analyze what we did and why we did what we did. Go to our Facebook page. Write your comments about tomorrow so we can all read them. Won't that be fun? It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for listening. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee.